Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Turning Towards Life. This is our Sunday morning third space offering with me, Lizzie, and this lovely Justin person with me now. We are very glad, as always, to be doing this. And thank you for joining us for this, probably what will be a wild dance of no hope of some kind. We've got this wonderful source that Justin's brought us today, the Dakini Speaks. And it feels like it's going to be very rich. I've been reading this and feeling into it, and it's a very big, full offering, this poem. So I'm very excited and also quite kind of arrested simultaneously at the fact that we get to talk about this. Like, I find that really exciting, and I also think it's a real challenge that this presents to us on so many different levels. So I'm very happy to be here.
Thank you, Lizzie. Morning, everyone. I am delighted to be here as well. I'm also feeling into the magnitude and magnificence of this source, what it brings us up against. And I realise, and it was my week to choose a source, and that this has come out of something of me feeling like I'm in a fight, you know, a fight with the way I don't want things to be, a fight with the way I want things to be. Something of a fight with the world and its state this week. So I wanted to see what would happen, Lizzie, if you and I grappled with ourselves and grappled with this text. And you know, how, I suppose how inspiring and helpful it is sometimes to have sources that in a straightforward way just enhopen us, just to use a word that you've used before. And then sometimes how much we need to grapple and argue and wrangle, which is mostly what I find myself wanting to do with this and with myself as I read it. So I'm glad we're doing this. I'm also glad that we are now firmly in our second year of this project, and that feels deeply wonderful and exciting to me.
I think it might be real now.
It's real, that's right. Actually doing it, look at that. So I think maybe I'm going to read this one first, Lizzie, and then have you read it second. So this is The Dakini Speaks by Joyce Wellwood. And one more thing before I read this. One of the reasons this has been in my mind is that last Sunday, when we did the last episode of Turning Towards Life, I was just about to go into running the last day of the second long weekend session of our year-long coaching program, the professional coaching course, and we read this poem together that morning, right in the midst of a big event that we do on the Sunday morning of that session. So it's been with me since then. And here it is, The Dakini Speaks. My friends, let's grow up. Let's stop pretending we don't know the deal here. Or, if we truly haven't noticed, let's wake up and notice. Look, everything that can be lost will be lost. It's simple. How could we have missed it for so long? Let's grieve our losses fully like ripe human beings, but please, let's not be so shocked by them. Let's not act so betrayed as though life had broken her secret promise to us. Impermanence is life's only promise to us, and she keeps it with ruthless impeccability. To a child, she seems cruel, but she is only wild, and her compassion exquisitely precise. Brilliantly penetrating, luminous with truth, she strips away the unreal to show us the real. This is the true ride. Let's give ourselves to it. Let's stop making deals for a safe passage. Let's stop making deals for a safe passage. There isn't one anyway, and the cost is too high. We are not children anymore. The true human adult gives everything for what cannot be lost. Let's dance the wild dance of no hope.
So I just want to invite everybody, if you're listening, to us to just take a deep breath and feel into what it's like to have this body and see what you can do to just relax even that little bit more and hear this next reading of this poem with that kind of contact. The Dakini speaks, "My friends, let's grow up. Let's stop pretending we don't know the deal here. Or if we truly haven't noticed, let's wake up and notice. Look, everything that can be lost will be lost. It's simple. How could we have missed it for so long? Let's grieve our losses fully like human ripe beings. But please, let's not be so shocked by them. Let's not act so betrayed as though life had broken her secret promise to us. Impermanence is life's only promise to us, and she keeps it with ruthless impeccability. To a child, she seems cruel, but she's only wild, and her compassion exquisitely precise. Brilliantly penetrating, luminous with truth, she strips away the unreal to show us the real. This is the true ride. Let's give ourselves to it. Let's stop making deals for a safe passage. There isn't one anyway, and the cost is too high. We are not children anymore. The true human adult gives everything for what cannot be lost. Let's dance the dance. Or let's dance the wild dance of no hope."
I could feel the part of me in reading this that wants to yell in a howl of rage. It's not true. It's not true. Don't tell me this. And I suppose it's particularly, you know, on the one hand with this poem, I find it, there's a kind of a profound kind of liberation in it of, oh my goodness, there really are no guarantees, and how much I pin myself in and hem myself in and other people around me by wanting guarantees and by being rageful when the world isn't turning out the way I want it to. And right now, there's so many ways it seems the world isn't turning out the way I've wanted it to. And at the same time, I think about my own children and I think, but what I want for them is to be safe. I don't want them to have to face this. And so the tension between the two, I can feel in me the tension between the two, which aren't just about my children, aren't just about myself. They're about all of us. Although on the one hand, it's like such a breath of searing fresh air to realize that nothing's guaranteed and that everything will be lost and that everything will change. And that's what's happening all the time. Can we dive in and be in the midst of all of that? And at the same time, the part of me that, there's a part of me that won't have it, Lizzie, that is in deep opposition.
Yeah, I think the part of me that's in deep opposition manifests itself as, I think, denial. Like, it's much easier, like it says at the top, stop pretending we don't know the deal here. You know, it's like, oops. I think I pretend quite a lot that this isn't the deal. And this curious thing happens for me is like, I know I'm in denial. And then when this gets brought to me, I have a deep sense of relief. Because underneath that denial, I know there's like this huge sense of my heart being so broken open and so vulnerable and so tender and yeah, just very, very open. And so, of course, it's easier for me to be in denial than to feel like that all the time, to feel that raw. And so when she invites us to grieve our losses fully and not be shocked by them, as in, oh yes, this is what it is to be a human being. This is how fragile the whole deal is. It's like I think, oh God, thank God someone's helped me to get through that layer that seems to be like a kind of modus operandi, I think. Because for me, I know that all of my avoidance tactics and my denial tactics and everything are all covering up this kind of tenderness, this vulnerability and this fragility of truly from one day to the next, we have no idea what's going to happen and who we're going to lose and how that's going to happen and what we're going to lose and what parts of ourselves we might lose. And this part of the poem as well about stripping away the unreal to reveal the real, it feels to me like that's what happens for me in the reading of it, is that the unreal part of me is really the denial and the whatever deal I'm making with myself. Or if you go to sleep to that, then you can just kind of carry on or do something that's not in line with what you're doing here in the world or whatever. And in the deal making, my realness gets completely kind of obscured. And so it's revealing to me this relationship that we might have between safety and realness and all of our safety strategies. Like the one I'm seeing most clearly now is denial and avoidance, basically. If I can stay in denial and avoidance, I stay safe. And when those get peeled back to reveal this very risky heart position that I find myself in of, oh my gosh, the way I love, oh my gosh, the way I'm attached, oh my God, the way I'm beholden, in, it feels like I'm in the hand of something that could just crush me in that place, in that vulnerability. It doesn't feel, I was going to say it doesn't feel safe, but that's not true, because actually when I tune into it, it's very, very safe. But this whole making deal for a safe passage, that feeling of that, i.e. if I don't go there, everything will be fine. And then as it gets kind of stripped out, I'm like, oh my gosh, no, that's not fine at all. It makes it even more brittle. And maybe the true human adult giving everything for what cannot be lost is that there's a place that I can be in my vulnerability where loss isn't the kind of loss that I would have to suffer if I was in that very brittle place of denial and avoidance. And if I was in this realness, when I am in my realness, safety lies there in a much deeper, richer way. But it takes this poem and many other things to have me drop in there and be that open and that vulnerable. And I also don't get there a lot of the time. And yet when I am there, I go, oh, I can see all the ways I haven't been here and I haven't been attending to this part of me. And it feels much more robust to be here now as a human being.
Just before I say anything else, after all the beautiful and powerful things you're saying, your microphone is rubbing against your amazing scarf.
I'm going to hold it up here.
I'm taken and touched by so much that you're saying, and the part that's coming forward for me most strongly is this part about deal making.
Mm-hmm.
And it's coming to me how much my own suffering, I can just talk about my own suffering for a moment, is related, as Joyce Wellwood points out so brilliantly, is related to a kind of deal, trying to be in a deal, which I took up, and I suppose most of us take up early on, because it's this very childlike position, which is if I'm this way, I behave in this way, then the world will be the way I want it, and that's the deal. People will love me the way I want. People won't abandon me. I won't lose anybody. I'll have the conditions of my life will be as I want them. The conditions in politics will be as I want them. The condition of the environment will be the way I want it. And like you're saying, as long as we're in that, and I'm aware that I am in that a lot because it's like a automatic position to be in when I'm not really awake to myself and I'm not asking big enough questions. This mm-hmm. is how life feels. Well, I'll just keep up my being good and not upsetting people and being just the way that people want me to be. And then the other half of the deal maker, which is what, I don't know, God, life, existence, something, will keep its part of the bargain.
Mm.
And then I won't have to face stuff and I'll feel okay.
Mm.
And that part of the, what I love about this poem and find so, there's many things I love about this poem, but one of the things that's striking me now is the way that Joyce Willwood cuts through and shows us that it's our, in order to not live that way, we have to give up our sense of being betrayed when life doesn't come that way. Because to be betrayed is to be in the narrative of there's a deal. I feel like this a lot. Look, I worked hard, I thought deeply, I took responsibility, I had as much integrity as I could, I didn't, you know, all of that. And now this, and that is, So, and part of it for me actually has been, which connects to the last line, part of my way through this is to feel my own rage at it, is to not, part of my own deal making in the world has been, oh, don't get too angry as well, because if you get angry, then all of these things will happen, is to start to get, like in a very straightforward way, in contact with, I'm really angry about this. Of course I want the world my way.
Mm.
Of course I do. So, and as I start to get in contact with my own anger about it, two things happen. One is I can start to see and feel more the construct I'm in. Oh, this is a betrayal story. Oh, at every step I'm watching out for not getting betrayed in this way and not having, you know, and having the world the way I want it. But the other thing is, that's very inspiring to me in this poem is this last line about let's dance the wild dance of no hope. Now, actually, I think that there is a lot to be said for hope, and I wonder in what way she means that I have a wrangle with this, and in one way I get it, and another way I fight with it. But to dance the wild dance is part of the way in. That our ability to dance and allow our wildness and our aliveness in the face of this, what I heard someone recall recently, I'm not sure who is the origin of this, the whole catastrophe. But there's one way in which life is just a whole catastrophe. It just never works out. But then there's something else in there, which is what you've been pointing to, which is there's a kind of aliveness that runs all the way through that is also very reliable in us.
Mm.
And somehow this is where she gets to in the poem, is that when we start to get in contact with this, we can find out that all of the deals are unhelpful. And yet that doesn't mean that there's nothing left.
Mm-hmm.
For as long as we have it, there still is something. And it's a kind of wild, something.
Yeah. And I think the last two lines are linked to one another as well. So the true human adult gives everything for what cannot be lost. Let's dance the world dance of no hope. For me, it's like what cannot be lost is us, as in our true nature, life itself. We can't lose that. It's the presence is always here. We can be in denial about it or avoiding the moment or whatever, but there's something about presence I get invited into by those lines, which is, if you're dancing the wild dance of no hope, you might have like your eye on the future and what might happen and what the consequences of all this catastrophe is. But it's important to not, for us to have access to this wild dance, because that's the life force that we can become present to, that's ultimately the supporting thing that has us take a step, just one, in tomorrow morning when we wake up and make a cup of tea. We might wake up without a deal, as in without a feeling of, I better do this for the safe passage, but maybe in service of something more wild, something more alive, that has us feel like the life that we're living is our life, and has us step in one small way into a life that feels more real or more vulnerable or more aligned with our Justinness or our Lizziness. And I also rely on hope, and yet there's also a way of hope becoming a strategy as well.
Right.
You know, hope being one of those deals that I make. Well, if I just hope, it will all turn out all right because I'm really powerful and I can hope. And of course I'm powerful and I can hope. But it takes a lot more than hoping for things to happen. And without our aliveness intact and without our wildness and our dance being danced, hoping might not do the trick. And so it's the kind of, I'm feeling like the infusing of life force in amongst our strategies so that they can dance the dance together, which is, of course, we're never going to put down our strategies and we're never going to be completely purely present and whatever. But if we can let presence infuse our patterns and align ourselves, tune into, be with life itself by dancing this wild dance, maybe that's an ultimate self-caring, self-dignifying, self-centering support that encourages us and supports us in stepping into the parts of ourselves that have that courage and the boldness and the willingness. And actually, Justin, I see this in you a lot at the moment, which is, I feel like you step into realms that are not your comfort zone, that are not your what you would normally do, and I feel like all of us can do that more if we're in receipt of this something unsocialized, something a bit bad, something a bit kind of wayward. And that's what I feel this invites me into, is, well, what's my waywardness that supports me in not just doing the things that please people and the right thing and all that kind of thing, because that might not be what's needed.
Yeah, I really get that. There's something really subtle and really important about hope in here that you're drawing our attention to, which is something like the kind of hope that comes from being inside the story of the deal goes, if I whatever, then something else. And that's the kind of hope that we have. And it's so often not true. You know, if I'm good, everybody will love me. Maybe not. If I take care of everything, I'll never have to face pain, loss, illness, surprise. Not the case. Or part of what had me choose this poem this week was actually the news from the IPCC, so the Climate Change Commission from the UN. The news is terrible. And what do we do? And I can feel the part of me that wants to be in the narrative of the deal, which goes, well, if I'm just good enough and hope enough, everything will be okay. And the flip side of it, which is equally paralyzing, because that's a paralyzing position, actually, because it has me do that kind of hope just has me do nothing, really. And then the flip side of it is, well, if I can't have that kind of hope, then I might as well give up. And there's a different kind of hope in the middle of it, which I think is right. What I'm seeing from what you're saying is, it's in a way, when we step out of that, we find the wild, alive, present part of ourselves that's not caught up so much in anybody's deal, like the social deal we're in, all the ways that we're deal making in our own minds and in our relationships. And then we have a chance for, we've talked, and you brought a piece by Rebecca Solnit a few weeks ago, and she talks about a kind of hope, which is not that, you know, things are going to turn out, but where you bring yourself. That's hope. And I think that that's what's in here, even though she says it's the wild dance of no hope. Actually, I think it's that kind of hope, which is allowing our fullest everything to be present and to do our best to take care of that which we feel moved to take care of, and at the same time knowing that none of it's guaranteed. And that's the sort of unique place of human care here, is that we do that. And it does require a kind of wildness and a kind of dance in the face of, I mean, this is what I'm trying to learn how to do, is how to dance in the face of all of the disappointment and all of the despair and all of the ways in which a promise that I thought was given isn't manifesting, the promise of a safe, peaceful, trouble-free, successful, whatever other adjectives you want to add to it, life.
Mm-hmm. And I noticed as well, in my dance of wildness, I get so many stories of, like, you know, for example, saying no to something and it not being what people want to hear. Just a simple, you know, I mean, it's simple in a way because you can just say it quite cleanly, saying no to something. But I think that's such a huge thing. Because in that, for me, recently saying no to something, I felt myself thinking, am I irresponsible? Am I, you know, all these kind of very big kind of questioning of self comes up. Because it's not the socialized me who's saying no. It's the me who is dancing the world dance of no hope that's saying no. And so that part of me isn't so familiarly in relationship with other people in the world. And therefore, when it comes to speak, it's like, what? Lizzie said no. And I feel myself saying that and other people around me as well. And it's like, no, I think that's what I want to do. And it's not about anyone else's, what they think of me. It's actually something where I can align with myself. And that's my boundary. And that's how I'm doing this. And even saying that, I can feel like I can feel a strengthening in me in the saying of it. And no wonder it wobbles all my structures of the way I take care of relationship and the way I think I should be in the world and what I got taught to be as a fairly compliant human. And I feel that wildness and what a challenge that can be as well to the world, the people around me, to my own self expectations and who I think I should be. So it's no small thing to dance this wild dance. It really isn't.
Right, of course. That's the yeah, it's so interesting. Because there's a way of reading a poem like this, and any source, which is a way of trying to keep the deal going. Oh, I read Joyce Wellwood's poem, so now I get that everything changes and I'll lose everything and I just got to dance the wild dance of no hope. Phew. Now it's all okay. Which would be that, I mean, at least in the nature of my own kind of deal with the world, that's the way it goes, is now I won't have to really, really face anything. And like you say, so to dance, to step into Joyce Wellwood's invitation, I think means continually being confronted by the ways the world isn't the way that we want it to be, and continually being confronted by our disappointment and our grief and our rage and our despair and our hope and, you know, all of that. But there's no way, I'm taking from what you're saying, there's no way out of that. So you're saying no, which in this way that you describe, that then calls all kinds of other things into question and may change things and may change relationships and may change you and may change nothing and who knows. We're going to have to keep on doing that again and again and again. and the extent to which we think that any one of them is the one that clinches the deal and lets us off the hook is the moment at which we go back to sleep again.
Yeah.
And of course, the problem with going back to sleep again is it stunts our capacity to participate in life, and it also stores up. We have to endlessly be in the midst of the suffering of being betrayed by life, because life will always betray us in one way or another. Nothing is guaranteed. So we are, really something to grapple with this, grapple with this text. And I can, like any good, powerful art, there's hours of talking to do about this. There's a lifetime's talking to do about this.
Absolutely.
30 minutes on a Sunday morning. It's just the tiniest, tiniest spice. But I guess that's why we're doing this again and again and again as well, is because, you know, even just for you and me, let alone anyone else who's listening into this, we have to keep going with this. We have to keep on bringing ourselves into the encounter. Well, I'm so glad we got to do this this morning.
Me too.
And we're at time, everyone. So I just want to say thank you so much for being with us, everyone. And we'll be back next Sunday morning, as long as certain basic conditions of life keep going. We'll be here.
Yes, we will.
We'll see you then.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.